Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisors.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
That's right. Another weekend here at the WJR and another weekend of the Internet Advisor. I'm here today with my pal, Ed Rudell, and we'll be going over a lot of great things today. We'll be talking about the new things that came out with Apple Computer this week. We'll talk about your credit, the Equifax breach, and how to protect yourself. And we'll also be talking with Alex Landos. He was a hurricane photographer and a relief worker. We'll be back in a few minutes here on the Internet Advisor.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm Ed Rudell, and Cal and I are co-hosting each other.
It is amazingly crazy, but good fun.
And we have Gary Baker on our line, and he's managed to make it back to the SS Minnow down in Florida in Fort Lauderdale. Gary, welcome, and I'm glad you're safe and sound.
Boy, thank you very much, and was it a relief. We spent, you may have heard about it, there was a little storm down here last weekend, and I spent the storm about 8 miles inland, tied up the boat, shared adventure as tightly as I could, and battened down the hatches, and got back here on Monday morning, one of the first people back, and it was floating. And I did my little happy dance, and everything else can be fixed.
I bet you cracked a few beers when you saw that thing floating.
I'll tell you what, it was a relief, actually.
How far inland did you...
My home as well, so...
How far inland did you have to go?
So I just did an Airbnb in Plantation, so it was about 8 miles inland. There was quite a bit of damage around there. I had three tries to get out of the neighborhood because of downed trees early on Monday morning. The curfew was lifted at 10, and... As you might imagine, I was trying to get on the barrier island here in about 5 or 6 minutes after that. I left my Airbnb host and got here about 10:30, and one of the first people back out on the island. There was a couple people that I found out later stayed. One guy stayed on his boat here in the marina, and he spent 20 hours bouncing around, holding on, and I thought that was really foolish and he wouldn't do that again.
And they scraped him off the ceiling.
yeah.
I bet.
So the word evacuate really means something.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to believe that there is any sand left on Fort Lauderdale's beaches because I think it all ended up on my boat. There was sand everywhere. In fact, there still is. I've washed it down completely over 4 times and parts of it more than that, and there's still sand pouring out of little crevices here and there, so it's going to take a while to get everything off.
Well, but at least
we're floating.
I was going to say, at least you're still floating, but another thing that happened before Irma, and then of course Houston was also hit with a hurricane, or the outskirts of a hurricane, is Equifax. And
boy, what a disaster that was, eh?
You know... Yeah, we have a number of people at work that were talking about it, and a lot of people were sensitive about actually providing that information, the same information that Equifax lost. You know, so you have to log into the website, provide 6 digits of your Social Security number, and if a little bit more, just to register so that you can get approximately, 1 year of protection. So, Gary, what was that website again?
So it was Equifax Security 2017. Hotels.com. I don't know why they put the year there. I would have thought they would have put the month in the year, because it's bound to happen to them again if they don't change their practices. I know that the CIO and the CISO, the Chief Information Security Officer and the Chief Information Officer, decided to retire yesterday, or the day before, but it was announced, I think, yesterday that they were retiring. But this was a breach that they knew about. It's a breach in open source software that a lot of companies use. It was identified by Homeland Security, some experts there, back in March, and Equifax didn't patch all of their servers.
Well,
I don't know why they didn't. But
and my understanding is, now, when did they actually discover the breach? It wasn't in August that they discovered the breach.
July 29th, they discovered it. They watched to see if it really was a breach until the 30th. They found other activity that was not that was consistent with the breach. It shut it down and then started to notify people, but they didn't go public with this until September 7th.
And you
so
know,
they're taking a lot of heat for that too, for spending, you know, allowing so much time in between.
Another thing that people are a little bit concerned about, and it may not be related at all, but for some reason or another, the breach happened like in July, and in between July and the time that they actually announced it, man, it was a big sale of a bunch of stock from Equifax.
Yeah.
So, you know,
those people are going to be in trouble too.
Yeah.
So about $200 million worth of stock was sold by executives before it was publicly announced. So that's insider trading, potentially. But anyway, well, that's too bad that happened. But if you do get a hold of EquifaxSecurity2017.com, you can find out, first of all, if you're affected. 143 million were affected. So that's going to be a problem. And, you know, most of us are going to be affected. But then you can sign up for third-party credit monitoring, ID theft insurance, credit reports, and some other services, they say.
I think
so
that's going to be
worth us all doing that.
For the free service, it's only for 1 year free, but it's almost to the point, with as many breaches that have taken place through all the different corporations in the last 8 years, I think every U.S. citizen's information is probably out there in one form or another. And
yeah, this is a problem, though. This is not credit card information, per se. It is that. But you just changed the number. I just had to do that this morning with my credit card provider, and they're sending me a new card. Okay, it'll get here in 2-3 days. But there's some things that Equifax had, some personal information. It's called PII, Personally Identifiable Information, that you can't change. You can change your address. You can't change your date of birth and Social Security number.
Okay, well, we're coming to a commercial break, and Gary's absolutely right about that. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Alex. What's his?
Alex Landos.
Landos.
Yeah,
thank
you. He's both a hurricane relief worker and a photographer down there, and we'll talk about that and so much more in our next break here on the Internet Advisor. Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is Cal Carson here with Ed Rudell, and from afar we have Mr. Gary Baker, and we're here today to give you the best that we always give you here on the Internet Advisor. And I just wanted to go back and talk about the Equifax thing a little bit longer, and one of the things that we have to really be concerned with is protecting ourselves after the Equifax breach. And Gary brought up the information about going to the website and putting in the information so that you can find out if you were a victim, and if you were a victim, to sign up for the credit monitoring. Now, in addition to that, there's another site that I would suggest people go to. I follow Clark Howard. He's a money sort of guy on the radio and television, and has been for many, many years, and really a good guy for information when it comes to money. And he has a lot of good things on his website. That's Clark.com or ClarkHoward.com. And you go to his website and click on the Equifax picture. And he talks about how to avoid the scams that are possibly going on with the Equifax breach. He also talks about how to protect your your credit and your identity from that Equifax breach, which includes things like freezing your credit and a bunch of other steps. So we'll get a link out on our Internet Advisor website to this particular site. But if you have a paper and pencil or if your brain is working really good, just go to clarkhoward.com or clark.com and click on the Equifax link. And it's got a lot of great information out there to protect you from this Equifax breach.
Cal, you make a very good point there. That's really helpful to our listening audience. I really appreciate you talking about that. I think we have to be really careful, and people should pay attention. If you freeze your credit and now you want credit for any reason, you're going to have to go. What they do is they give you a token number, and you you have to have that token number to ever unfreeze your credit. So don't lose it, and don't put it on any internet connected device. But when you go to unfreeze it so that you can get legitimate credit, you're going to have to do that 2 to 3 days prior to the time you want that credit, because it takes that long to unfreeze it sometimes. So it is more draconian, but it is a better solution if you're really worried about somebody stealing your identity.
Excellent.
And this is not a credit card number that can be changed. Like I said, this information is your information forever and ever. This problem is not going to go away. This isn't a credit card breach. This is your personally identifiable information breach, and that will last the rest of your life.
That's the reason why I like Clark's website, because he explains the freeze process and the whole situation and how it works. And he also indicates one other thing real quick, and then we're going to move on, and that is be concerned about possibly even freezing your children's information out there so that they can't use that as well. At this time, I think what we'd like to do is, Gary, could you tell us a little bit about our next guest that we're going to be talking with and how you met up with him and what he does?
Sure, absolutely. In a moment, I'm going to introduce and have Alex Lundos join us. But let me tell you how I met Alex. And it was interesting from the standpoint that I got out here on Monday morning on the Barrier Island here in Fort Lauderdale, kind of at the beach. Went across, looked at the beach, and I did a 360-degree video. And there was not a car in sight. There was one other person kind of on the far side walking way down. And it was all sand. You couldn't tell where the road started and stopped. I mean, it was just covered with sand. And along comes this guy with a backpack, a Red Cross relief case that he was carrying, and a big backpack, lots and lots of weight, and not a huge guy, sat down and was trying to get to the internet, which none of us could do for a number of days, and we started talking, and I found out not only is he a journalist, and we can point to a lot of the activity that he has captured in photos and video, has a drone with him, that's kind of cool, and you could see some of the drone pictures, but he's also a recognized, credentialed disaster relief expert as well. So with that introduction, Alex, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for the great introduction. And as you know, I'm right here in Ground Zero. I'm on Summerlin Island in the Florida Keys. So this is a wonderful opportunity to tell everyone what it's like here and ways that they can help and the situation that's unfolded. So,
you know, so, you do see the behind the scenes, too, a little bit more than what enabled maybe to talk about it, a little bit more than, say, we see on television and some of the more well-known media sites. Tell us a little bit about what's going on. Now, you're closer to actually landfall, Ground Zero, which is Big Pine Key, right?
I was in Big Pine half an hour ago, and now I'm in Summerlin. Both of these areas, on top of Kodjo and A few of the other nearby keys are considered ground zero because the massive size of this hurricane. So there's a lot of destruction. You can kind of tell where it went through specifically depending on what direction the trees are blowing through. So you were talking about my unique perspective, and being a journalist and also being a first responder has given me that opportunity in the past, in Iraq, when the Peshmerga military were fighting ISIS, or in the Philippines after the superstorm, or Nepal after the earthquake, that allows me to go on ride-alongs. It allows me to transport medical supplies or volunteer in hospitals or do search and rescue. I've moved dead bodies. And a combination of different tasks that are directed towards helping people or the environment, at the same time having my notepad and paper right there and my phone, my camera, or different forms of media with me. So it allows me to capture what's really going on and also keep everybody honest. If I see aid being distributed unevenly, I'm able to write about that or say something about that. And it keeps people honest in a sense. So being here, I have done both that. I have set out several objectives. The number one thing that people have been requesting on me is just information. Since there's no cell phones, there's not a lot of reliable sources of information. A lot of people come up to me, where is FEMA set up? When's the National Guard going to be here? Where can we get medical help? What stores are going to be open? What gas stations are distributing gas? Where can we get money? And all of these questions are I've been able to answer to the best of my ability through other conversations that I've had with different first responders on the ground, with the federal law enforcement, with the National Guard, with the head of FEMA directors while working in these. So that's been one way that I've been really beneficial to this. And yes, I have done some, media with my camera, my cell phone and my camera and my drone, in the beginning. And so I was here helping people evacuate 2 days prior to the hurricane. And that was after just getting back from Houston. I was in Houston for a while. I came here, I helped people evacuate, and I was actually trying to cut off the hurricane. I thought it was going to hit Fort Lauderdale. My calculations were wrong. So I waited out the storm in Fort Lauderdale, and I came in back to the Keys 2 days later. So I got in here a lot faster than the other aid groups, the National Guard, and a lot of the other responders. So I've had a pretty good perspective on what's going on here, and I am open to people contacting me that are wishing to make it into this area or that are inquiring on what people still need. And fortunately today I am seeing a large volume of people now entering the Keys because they've now opened up some of the checkpoints. At the beginning, they were holding a lot of people back. They were letting, the government agencies, National Guard, FEMA, the different federal branches of the government, state, local law officials, and the media in, but they were keeping a lot of the aid groups out.
Oh, hey, Alex, if you can, Alex, if you can hold on, we'll come back after this break. This is the Internet Advisor, and we're talking to Alex Landos, who's in the Keys right now with the hurricane relief, and Gary Baker in Fort Lauderdale. We'll be back with the Internet Advisor in just a moment. This is Ed Riddell with the Internet Advisor. I have Cal Carson in studio and Gary Baker in Fort Lauderdale and Alex Landos. Alex, now, when we were talking in the previous segment, you were going over about some of your experiences where you were in Fort Lauderdale and then migrated down to the Keys where most of the damage was done. In the next 3 to 5 minutes, if you could talk about something, a conversation you and Gary had about, I believe, about the building codes down there and how most of the structures that were damaged, seem to be, the older building codes.
Yes, I can definitely go into that. One of the connections that I made in between the superstorm that we saw, the hurricane here, and covering 30 or 40 forest fires throughout the last 16 years of my journalism career throughout California and the Oregon area, was that there's a lot of forest fires come through, and more often the houses that burn are the ones that aren't up to code, that don't clear their gutters or don't have defensible space around their property. A couple years ago, I covered a fire that burned 1,500 houses in the fire I was in, and a few hundred miles away, another fire burned 1,500 houses. So within 1 week, 3,000 houses were burned down, and the majority of those houses were because they didn't have defensible space. I'm seeing the same thing here. Most of the houses that made it through this hurricane as the storm surge washed from one side of the island to the other was they didn't have anything in the lower floor. It was just their car parking. Their house was on the second floor and above. And the homes that were destroyed, most of those were single floor homes, or they were mobile homes. A lot of the mobile homes were completely flipped upside down, washed away, pushed off. I've even seen some of them with all four sides collapsed. So those were grandfathered in to those codes, and the newer homes that are up to hurricane strength wind codes, and some of them even have bulletproof glass or doors that can withstand up to 155 mile an hour winds. Those are the homes that did really well. Take it, there was a lot of not just cyclonic activity, but there was tornadoes that were picking and choosing different houses to target. I've heard from a lot of eyewitnesses of tornadoes coming down and just ripping apart certain areas where the houses next to those were fine. But I think altogether what we're seeing here is that the houses that weren't up to codes were the ones that suffered the most damage.
That's incredible. So it's a lot of the...
It's kind of like insurance. You know, you get your house up to code, it's kind of like insurance.
Right, right. And there's a lot of mentality is not in my backyard or that won't happen to me. And a lot of us have that mentality. Was there any final point you wanted to get across before we have to let you go?
Fortunately, a lot of people did evacuate, and there wasn't a high casualty amount, but there was one officer earlier today, this morning, that told me that the current casualty count is at 8 people. So for those that haven't heard from someone, it's most people are fine. There's not a lot of injuries, but there are a few deaths, and that may increase in the following days.
Then we were speaking with Alex Landos. Thank you so much for taking part of your taking a break from your rescue efforts and your photography efforts. And we wish you all the best. And, you know, God bless you for what you do and traveling all over the place. You must be quite not a daredevil, but either a very compassionate person or you like living on the edge and or probably a bit of both.
And, I was going to say a bit of both.
Thank you very much, Alex, for joining
us. Thank you for the interview. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Take care. And
Alex told me many times when he would be walking down the street and some kids were, you know, just kind of walking, coming the other way, just stunned, you know, no expression on their face, nothing, and having him stop and just talking to the kids and helping them understand what's going on and that, you know, their homes were destroyed, they can't find their parents, and Alex taking care of them, so... truly, people like him, remarkable that they're able to jump in and do so much for us all.
Yep.
You know, Gary, in relation to all that's been going on in the world in the past week or so with the hurricanes and Korea and all that sort of thing, you know, there was a quiet little celebration, beginning of a new era out in Cupertino this past week as well, on Tuesday. And Apple did their traditional announcement of their new product for this time of year.
Products, and, I hope.
Yeah, it was more than one, I think.
Okay, good. I'm sorry.
And but
yeah, usually that's the big explosion in PR is that little announcement out there in Cupertino, and thankfully that was the respite for us from all the disaster news to tune in and listen to. What turns out to be a 10-year anniversary kind of celebration for Apple, right?
Yeah, it was a great keynote. Tim Cook came out. They had their first ever product launch on the Apple campus in the new Steve Jobs theater, which was just watching that was amazing in itself because of how you go into the theater. I mean, it's all glass all the way around. You don't see anything supporting the roof but glass. And then you go down below the actual underground, and that's where the theater was. And they announced a couple of new toys or tools that they created. And, of course, it was a new watch, the new Apple Watch Generation 3. And I found that to be kind of interesting because on this new Generation 3 watch, it actually has a cellular modem in the watch itself. So now, if you need to make a phone call, you don't have to take your phone with you and have it tethered to the watch. You can actually leave your phone at home, but you still can retain your phone number and make and receive calls on the watch while you're out and about.
So it's not its own separate plan. It's associated with your existing phone number.
Yes. I don't have all the information on it, but I believe with your particular cell provider, you pay them an extra $10 a month. And for that extra $10 a month, you get to be able to have that cell service on the watch and as well as on your phone. So it uses the same number in two different
places.
It's
like a party line for those old enough to remember it. That's a...
Yeah. I never thought about that, but that is a good way of putting it.
I was just thinking that calling Dick Tracy that I used to watch on reruns, because, of course, I'm not old enough to ever see that, the original cartoon. But we're getting closer and closer to the reality of old, just talking to your wrist.
Well, I think you're pretty much there with this watch now, finally, because you can talk both ways. And if I'm not mistaken, you can probably even do I don't remember if you can do FaceTime on it.
Now, does it do Bluetooth?
It has Bluetooth, Wi-Fi as well.
And what's nice, it has Wi-Fi, so that's interesting. I was going to say that most Bluetooth headsets now that you could pair with your phone, you could also pair with your watch, and with the same device, you could actually, with the same headset, if you will, Bluetooth headset, you can answer any of these devices.
This is correct.
Ah.
Yeah, the watch is actually about 3 microns or millimeters thicker than the previous watch, so they were able to squeeze all that technology into that same space and give you the same sort of battery power on it as well. So it's a very interesting thing. For the first time, I'm actually starting to become attracted toward the watch, because initially it was like, it's okay, it's fine. My daughter has the Series 1 watch, and she's real happy with it. But the Series 3 one, it's starting to look really good, the fact that you can make and receive calls right on the watch. So if you live an active lifestyle, you do a lot of jogging and running, or even if you're out surfing, because the watch is water resistant or waterproof to a point, you can actually be out there on your surfboard in the water, and as long as you can pick up a cell signal, you can make and receive calls.
Okay, so what's the next Apple product?
Well, the next one after that would be Apple TV.
Again?
Yes, sir.
What's this, Apple 4? Apple TV
3? This is Apple TV 4K.
Whoa, that's creative. So it's not only the fourth generation Apple, but it's 4K.
Yes.
Now that's interesting. I like that play.
Yeah, a lot of people are excited about that. I have the Apple TV Generation 3.
You have all three of them.
And I'm happy with the 1080p. I'm happy with the 1080p because right now I don't have a 4K set, but for folks who are going 4K, then this Apple TV is definitely the one that they want to go with.
Now, did they partner with anyone unusual, or is it the same? Is Apple offering their own subscription service? You know, because that was speculated last time that maybe Apple's going to come up with their own, you subscribe to the Apple TV and we'll give you free this, but that didn't quite happen. Was there any announcements along those lines?
Well, you'll be able to stream news and sports directly to it. And they also have included...
So for free. So you just buy the Apple thing and plug it. You could figure it and you can get news and TV stations.
Yeah. A lot of what happens with Apple TV is based upon whatever ISP or cable provider that you're dealing with. So you also want to deal with that. But the other thing that I found interesting that they're offering with that now that I don't think they were offering before is now you can view Amazon Prime on your Apple TV.
Okay, well, that's good.
So if you have a Prime subscription, you'll be able to pull that stuff in directly to the Apple TV as well.
Excellent.
So with
I'm real interested in the iPhone 10. You missed that one.
Well, we can talk about that later on. We're going to take a break real quick and come back in a minute and talk with Mike Brennan from MI Tech News. In the meantime, take a break, go grab yourself a cold beverage, and make sure you stick and stay on this channel here at 760 WJR. We'll be back with more Internet Advisor soon. All right, we're back with the Internet Advisor again. Our great, great buddy Foster Braun is out still. He'll be back in the very near future. But while he's out, we all three and everyone else within the sound of my listening voice want to wish him good health and Godspeed on getting a great recovery from all the stuff that he's
doing. I talked to him before the show, and he sounded much better. As you know, when you're going through those type of treatments, you get what's known as a chemo brain, and it slows you down and it scatters you, and he's getting all his faculties back and his energy levels.
You know, that might be an excuse I'll use in the future for myself.
My wife went through it too, and it's not a fun experience.
No, but we definitely hope and wish that he gets recovered really fast and get him back here in this chair, and you'll be able to hear the dulcet tones of one Foster Braun right here. Also want to say thank you very much to the man who makes it responsible for us to be able to get our words out on the air, and that would be to Tom Baker, our engineer. Thank you very much, and thank you so much for doing what you do back there behind that glass. Now is the time when we like to turn to our source here in Michigan for all things technology and the media, and we're going to go to Mike Brennan. Hey, Mike, how you doing there? I understand that you're just getting back from a wonderful tailgate party.
Yes, I was sort of surprised that I didn't realize we were on the air today because we know occasionally get preempted by MSU. So, yeah, I went to the Michigan game and checked my emails and suddenly discovered we were doing this. So I'm here.
So who won the game?
Michigan, 29-13.
Okay, so I'm sure was this at the Big House, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I'm sure Ann Arbor is just as happy as pie and everyone's dancing and having a great time.
I'm not sure about the dancing part, but yeah, having a good time. And it being an early game, it got done around 3:30-ish, and so I was back at a tailgate and then finally got phone service and saw the message. So I scampered back to my house.
Hey, so, let's talk about some of the things in MI Tech News. And MI Tech News you can get to by going to mitechnews.com anytime to get the information that Mike does. Let's talk a little bit about the Detroit FinTech Association. Tell us a little bit about that and what they're up to.
Yeah, well, it was just announced this week. Jason Raznick, who is the CEO of Benziga, which is, they do a lot of financial coverage for some major heavyweight publications, Google, different folks like that. He built that from scratch. It's about 5 years old. He's a multimillionaire, or at least it's making multimillion dollars revenue, so that's wonderful for him. And so it turns out there's a big fintech sort of cadre here in the state and in the city and metro area. And fintech is financial technology, where you get your financial news, stock quotes, things like that. That would be fintech. So now they're creating this association for all these other fintech groups, companies, services, whatever, in Metro Detroit, and they're calling it the Detroit FinTech Association. And you can find all the details or how to sign up at my website.
Bazinga.
That sounds great. So that gives us a better focus on financials right here in our particular area if we want to get a more narrow focus on what's going on in that particular arena, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's one way. The thing is, if you're going to recruit to an area, particularly highly sought after technical people, as you know, if something doesn't work out at the job they get recruited to, the question they always ask is, what's my alternative? Do I have to go back to California? And so he's trying to create ecosystem here of fintech companies so that if somebody gets hired in by one company, doesn't work out, they can just go down the street and get hired in by another.
Tell us a little bit about the National Modeling Simulation Visualization. I love that. That's a mouthful of words right there. Conference that's going on in Dearborn this month.
Yeah, September 26th at the Henry Hotel. And it's the first time it's ever come to Michigan. It's been this group always meets in the Virginia area since it's real heavy defense-oriented. And Northern Virginia is right next to D.C., and, of course, that's where all the connections are. So it's here. It's going to be talking about and raising the visibility of all these different folks. Yeah, modeling, simulation, visualization are used in so many areas, manufacturing, robotics, you name it. And, of course, we have the auto industry uses it pretty extensively. So this will be a chance for anybody that wants to get more up to speed on what's going on in this area to attend an event. It's really inexpensive, $150 for the day, includes all your meals. Get to be at the Henry in Dearborn, which is the old Ritz-Carlton, so it's a really nice hotel. And again, the folks at Rave Computer in Sterling Heights, Rick Darter, he's been the state co-chair on this, and we're going to be shooting some video there. MI Tech News will be. So I think it's going to be a great event, and certainly I'd encourage anybody interested in this to come to Dearborn at the Henry Hotel on September 26th.
Well, if you're talking about money, then I guess the only other thing left to talk about would be the Michigan Venture Capital Association. What are they up to lately?
Nice segue, by the way. This came out with a report, and the report shows that 2,476 professionals work at 152 organizations in the state, including 56 angel and venture capital companies. And so they're all essentially helping us develop the entrepreneurial ecosystem in the state, serving entrepreneurs in a variety of different ways, from anything to funding their company, to help them, getting organized, to help them write business plans, to teach them how to pitch private equity finance folks as an entrepreneur so that they can get money. And so that's considering where it was 20 years ago, that's wonderful. I mean, we didn't have much at all 20 years ago, and it's come a long ways.
That's terrific, Mike. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for joining us here and, taking some time out of your busy Saturday after the big game to call in and talk with us. If you want to know more about the things that Mike covers and so much more, please check out mitechnews.com. And you can also link to that off internetadvisor.net. And every week, or every day for that matter, Mike has all sorts of interesting information on MI Tech News that you can go and learn about and even participate in. So, Mike, we'll let you go, and you have a great day.
Thanks, everybody there. Have a great show.
Thanks a lot, Mike. We'll see you later. All right, Ed. So, what else do we want to talk about? Well, I'll tell you.
What? More Apple stuff?
Of course.
Okay, so they came out with the Apple iPhone 8 and 10X. We only have 2 minutes left in the segment, so we'll have to cover some of it at the end. But what are the big, shakeups on that?
Well, the big shakeup for me, the one that threw me off more than anything else, is that Apple is starting to be like Microsoft, and now they're getting to a point where they can't count anymore because there's no iPhone 9.
They skipped?
Yeah, pretty much. But they had a good reason for skipping, and I'll tell you more about that later on. But the iPhone 8 is a whole new phone, so now they have a total line that contains the iPhone SE. They have the iPhone 6S,
yep.
The iPhone 7, the 7 Plus, they have the 8.
And these are all on the market right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
8, the 8 Plus, and then they have the 10. Now, the 8 won't be available for ordering until sometime next week. And then the 10 won't be available for ordering until November.
Okay, so we still have time.
We can pre-order on the 7th, right? And
yes.
And then... with delivery and after the November 3rd.
So. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about
I want to talk about the 10. Cal, I want to hear your opinion on 10.
Okay. We'll talk some more about the features and stuff because we're coming up on a break right now. So we'll go over the features on the 8 and also on the 10, and then that way we can figure out what amount of money that Gary's going to spend on his next phone. So with that in mind...
Well, we're also taking listener calls next hour.
That's a good idea. So just to let you know, next hour is the time when you can call in with your questions to the Internet Advisor. Call in at 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-WJR. Call in the next hour, and we'll take your questions. And remember, there's no such thing as a dumb question unless it's a question that you never ask. So... with that in mind, we'll see you next hour here on the Internet Advisor.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter and at Detroit's newest podcast network, podcastdetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is our second hour of the show, and that's our listening hour. But we're going to talk a little bit more about the iPhone 8 and 10 Cal. We have Gary Baker in Fort Lauderdale, and he says most of the evacuees are starting to slowly trickle in. And I was teasing him during the commercial break about how good his audio sounds now. And we're thinking it's all the damn tourists. There are no tourists down there right now. And that's why the phone quality is so much better. But
you know, who knows? It could be that reason. Although I will tell you that the hotel next door is starting to fill up again. And thing other than the great big piles of sand all along the roadway that they're trying to remove, and hopefully they put it back on the beach. But you know, it's starting. You know, starting to get back to normal here. Well, we didn't take that direct hit. We had some tornadoes. One tornado hit was just about a mile north of us. And then another tornado was, I'm sorry, about a mile south of us. And then another tornado was about 3 miles north of us coming off the lake, or coming off, excuse me, the ocean. It's a big lake, big lake.
It's a pond, yeah.
Yeah, we... At least we didn't take the direct hits of those tornadoes. So,
well, Gary,
all's good.
Gary, you have a dinghy that goes along with your boat. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, you know, we were
contemplating taking that out today. Actually,
you could probably pick up a few extra dollars by hauling sand out and dumping it back in the ocean with that.
You know, there's a bunch of sand in the dinghy, and it's covered. Hard to believe. I got a cover on the dinghy that is on what's called davits that I used to pull it out of the water on the back of the boat. And, you know, so it was up pretty high and completely covered. And there's still sand. There's sand everywhere.
Okay. So we're going to take our listener calls after this at 800-859-0957. If you have a computer question, we'd love to talk to you about it. I have a few listener questions that I might be reading off. But, Cal, okay, iPhone 8, iPhone 10, what's going on?
It's just another case of wonderful nirvana. No, I'm just kidding. iPhone 8, let's talk about that one first.
So how big is it?
iPhone 8 is just as big as iPhone 7. It comes in the 8. And it comes in 8 Plus size. So you have the two different sizes,
okay,
which are identical to the iPhone 7. The difference, one of the biggest differences on the 8 is that you have different cameras on the back of the Plus version. It's a dual camera system back there. So you get two of them, so it gets a better focus and stuff like that.
And you can get stereographic photos, I would imagine?
Not yet. But they're working toward it. The editing capabilities for your photos on the new iPhone 8 and also on the 10, is that you can change the lighting as if you were in a studio shooting a shot. So if you wanted to do like studio lighting and make everything in the background completely dark and just have the focus on the portrait shot that you just did, that's one of the other things.
So better editing on the phone itself.
Better on-phone editing, the ability to shoot portraits on the phone, mm-hmm, as opposed to shooting them in landscape and getting them just quite right. It's just wonderful.
iPhones do take wonderful pictures.
They really, really do.
Now, help me. Did they get rid of that button? I heard someone say, the button, where's the button? Or was that Willy Wonka? But didn't they?
It depends on which phone you're talking about.
Oh.
If you're talking about the iPhone 8, it still has the little home button on it that you touch. It can read your fingerprint and unlock with it and open up the phone. But if you're talking about the iPhone 10, there's no button.
That's going to be so disorienting, removing all of these. So there's just basically a power button. Do they have the volume buttons too?
You have power and volume on both sides of the phone.
Okay.
But when you go to unlock the phone, you pick up the phone and you hold it up to your face. And when you do that, it reads your face and unlocks the phone.
Okay.
Now, unlike with the Android phones, that they had a face recognition program on it as well, but that program was just looking at it from a one-dimensional sort of aspect. So literally, you could take an Android phone and hold your photograph up to it. It would look at it and in some cases unlock, where with the iPhone, it's looking at not only just your face, but the contours and the shape of your face.
That's why you need the two cameras. Yeah,
yeah, so it gives you more three-dimensional look. Go ahead, Gary.
You know, Cal, You know, Cal, I'm a little worried, though, because they also have an infrared camera that will help it to augmented reality. And I'm a little concerned that when I hold it up to my face, it doesn't, like, all of a sudden start thinking for itself and shriek in horror. Oh, my God, he doesn't have his hair combed. Oh, you know, comb that hair, do this, where's it? Did you wash your face this morning?
Where's your sunscreen?
Don't get to that place.
But
yeah,
you know,
no kidding.
It looks at the structure of your face, because literally, not only can you have your hair all mussed up or forget to wash it or whatever, that sort of thing, if you have a hat on, if you have glasses on, it can tell your face under all that sort of stuff. If you're a woman and you change your hairstyle dramatically, it still can read your face and tell it.
Okay, so maybe I'll go back to this later and I talk about the security features of this. But so what's the gigabytes available on the iPhone 8 and 10? Is it 64, 128?
They come in 128 and 256.
Wow, that's more than my home computer.
Yeah. Yeah, so you get lots of space to be able to store lots of things on the phone. But like every other technology I've ever owned in my life, I always say, oh, I'll never fill this space up. And guess what?
We
fill it up really quick.
Okay. But we're going to be taking a quick break on the Internet Advisor.
And when we come back, we're going to take your calls. So call in at 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0WJR. And we'll be back after this message. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. My name is Cal Carson, and I'm here with Ed Rudell in studio. And on the phone, we have the ever popular and lovely Gary Baker coming to us live and direct from Florida. And we're here to answer your questions. If you have any questions about the Internet, about technology, we're here to answer those questions for you. And you can ask those questions quite simply by calling into our toll-free number. It's 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0WJR. And Ed, I believe you've got one of our listeners that have emailed you a question, and let's tell us about it.
Well, yep. I had Larry that wrote me a question while we were preempted last month, and he had an interesting one, and he provided a lot of details. But basically, he said, I have Picasa Photoshop problem, and about 3 years ago, your text helped me learn how to overcome problems I had transitioning to my new PC. Let's see. My new PC is designed so that I can download photos from my Canon digital camera using Picasa. No problem there. But I need to save as images and move them to Photoshop for if I want to do any type of further editing. How can I... somehow I cannot get that to work. There, can you guys help? So basically what I was describing to him in the answers is more than likely what Larry was doing was he's used to identifying the file in his like My Photos or wherever they're on his computer, and he's probably used to double clicking on them like most users are. And what's happened is you have, when you have multiple photo editors on your computer, Picasa and then Photoshop, when you're only one of those can be the primary program that's associated with when you double click, what program do you want to open up? Do you want to open Picasa or do you want to open up Photoshop? So when he installed his other program for his camera, what happened was is that the Picasa became the default program for opening up graphic programs. What I simply told him to do is either he could change his preferences by right mouse clicking on his photograph and select open with and select the appropriate program like Photoshop and make that the new default. Or he can just open up the program Photoshop and then do file open. Am I confusing you? Because remember, what we're dealing with is double click, and only one program can be double. When you double click on a file, only one program can be identified as the default. But you can always open up another program. You know, if you want to use Microsoft Paint, or if you want to use Picasa or Photoshop, and you can always do file open and open up that file, that graphic file.
Once you set that as your default on that particular file, is that for just that particular file, or does that make it for all other files just like that anytime you click on it?
Well, it's just for that file type. So if it's a JPEG, JPG, then anytime he double clicks on a JPEG file, it's going to open up the default program. you know, if he's open up, if he has a more advanced camera and he's opening up a RAW, R-A-W photograph file, he can make it so I always want to use Photoshop when I'm opening up a RAW image. You know, so the preference is basically he said, thank you very much. You got me on the right track. It's just up to me to modify my personal work habits so that, I've provided him alternate ways of accessing, you know, his photos and editing them.
And not only is that true for his photos, but that's true for any file that he's going to use on his computer. If it was a document file, like a text file, and he normally used something like Microsoft Word, and let's say he doesn't have Word on his computer and he's using OpenOffice, he can right mouse click on it and say open with, and then point to OpenOffice, and then subsequent files would do it with OpenOffice. Is that correct?
Right. Oh, exactly.
Okay. That sounds great. Hey, listen, we've got some callers calling in right now, so let's see if we can take some of those calls. Let's start off with Jim from Westland. Jim, thank you for calling to the Internet Advisor. What's your question for today?
Okay. I have a new iPad Pro, which I've had for about a month. The resolution is good on it. The stereo sound is good. I like a lot of things. But, for example, in Skype, on the iPad Pro, unless I'm guessing with the new program, they're going to have an upgrade on the operating program. You can't even share screen on Skype like I can on my other computers that are Apple.
In other words, within Skype, you want to be able to share the screen with the person that's on the other end receiving.
Yeah, I want to share the screen on my computer. I'll say I have trouble with this. Tell me what to do and what you see that I'm doing that way. That's why I want to have share screen.
Oh, yeah, share or present. So now, does that feature, are you asking if that feature exists on the iPad?
It doesn't exist. I'm telling you, it doesn't.
It doesn't exist.
I called the Apple twice already on that issue, and currently it's not available. I'm presuming maybe if they put a new operating system on, maybe it'll have more capability. I don't know if I'm shooting in the dark on that one.
Well, you're kind of shooting in the dark just a little bit, and I'll tell you why. Skype is a program that's written and owned by Microsoft. And
right,
Apple,
but it works on my other, I bought an Apple computer 2 years ago, a desktop, that is superb resolution. And that one works on the Apple, and it shares screen just like it does on my wife's PC. It doesn't stop it from sharing screen.
Well, but what you're talking about is two different PCs, right, Cal?
Well, he's talking about
I'm talking about one PC and one Apple.
You're talking about two different operating systems, and let me try.
Yeah,
and
they both share screen, the PC and the Apple. They're both sharing it.
You got a Microsoft PC, and then you have an Apple PC, but the iPad is a tablet.
No, it's not an Apple PC. It's just a Microsoft PC. It's not an Apple PC.
Okay, let's stop.
On both the Apple and my and PC, I can share screen with Skype.
Correct.
When I put on my iPad Pro, I cannot.
That is correct. Now, here's what the difference is. Your iPad Pro is running a different operating system than your PC or your Mac.
I know.
Okay, and until Microsoft, who owns Skype, writes a program to enable that feature, you won't be able to do it.
Well, they're coming out with a new system in 2 weeks. How do we know that new system is going to not open up that feature?
Well, I would.
That's Apple is going to release.
Apple's going to release a new operating system.
Right.
But
I'll give you an example. I upgraded my desktop Apple computer to Aries operating system, and all of a sudden I got a voice dictation program. I like to try to attempt to write books. And it was better than Dragon Speaking, which came with Aries.
Right, but these are all individual programs.
Yeah. So I think what we're struggling with here is, and Cal said it, and I'm not sure that it was completely understood. You have an operating system that runs an Apple computer and an operating system that runs a PC. What you have on your iPad is an app. And the app is only as good as the app provider. The app provider is Microsoft. So when Microsoft creates an app for the iPad that includes the ability to share the screen, then you will be able to download that app and use it.
Well,
but they have not created that app yet.
Yeah, completely independent of what Apple is releases. It is basically right. Microsoft has not created an app for the iPad Pro
that allows it.
It's an Apple thing, but there might be alternate programs that do that.
Matter of fact, I would suggest that you take a look at a program called Team Viewer.
Okay, I've got Team Viewer on. Okay, let me give it to you real short because there's other callers beside me.
Okay, go.
Team Viewer will not let me share on anybody else's computer but my other computer in the house. I can share Team Viewer with the PC. A friend of mine who's very much more knowledgeable than I am, he can't address my Apple. Once I put Team Viewer on the Apple iPad Pro, he can't address my computer. It will not function that way.
Okay. Well, I'm going to suggest this because we're going to a break right now. In 2 weeks, take a peek at Microsoft.com and look at Skype and see if those features have been added to that particular program, and perhaps you'll have that function. If not, send an email to Microsoft and ask them when that function will be available. We're going to take a quick break and be back in a few minutes here and the Internet Advisor.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm Ed Riddell with Cal Carson and Gary Baker. And you wanted to ask, you were supposed to be in Florida this week, weren't you, Cal?
Yeah, actually, I was supposed to be in Tampa this weekend as well, doing a skating competition down there. So this evening, I would be sitting somewhere having a nice Cuban, drinking a mojito, and enjoying a good Cuban sandwich, but I'm not going to be able to do it because Gary decided he wanted to have a hurricane.
Yeah, well, you know, I hear the mosquitoes are starting to get bad down there, so, and they're really concerned about
that. You know, I haven't seen them at all.
I was going to ask you.
I have not seen them at all.
You'd see them if you moved the sand out the way.
Yeah, maybe that's true. But I will tell you, there are not bugs like I thought there would be down here.
Well, you know, you are on the ocean, and you do get a breeze, which would then typically blow them inshore. But I'm sure what they're concerned about is inland more with all that water and the Okeepinokee Swamp and stuff like that. And
you know, I always wonder how the gators fared in the swamp during a hurricane. Did they get, like, moved around a
lot
or what?
They have swimming pools they can hide in.
Ah, that's great. Well, with that in mind, I'm going to give out the number again. And that's 1-800-859-0957 if you want to call in and ask a question. In the meantime, let's go to line two. We've got Joe from Detroit. Joseph, what's going on?
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
We're doing great. What gets you to call in on a day like this?
Well, I have a real primitive question. Do I have to pay somebody a monthly fee, or can I buy a modem and just hook it up in my phone line to access the Internet?
In order to get on the Internet, you always have to be able to go through what they call an ISP, or an Internet Service Provider. That could be your cable TV service. That could be your telephone service through AT&T over a telephone line. But yes, unfortunately, you have to pay somebody something.
Well, I mean, unless they have dial-up. Gary talked about that, I think, a little while ago, but it's so slow that it would take you... Dial-up would take you over traditional landlines. You would take you 30 minutes to receive the advertisements.
Because the fastest you could go on the landlines is 56K, which is pretty darn slow. But yes, you got to pay somebody a monthly fee in order to get onto the Internet.
Right. Or, you know, cell providers. So if you have your cellular provider, you can work with them to get a and tether your phone to your home computers or laptop, and they're called Wi-Fi hotspots. But there's a limitation on how much data you can actually pull down.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought about something. I was wrong. You don't have to pay someone a monthly fee. If you have a laptop computer and you can go anywhere there's a Wi-Fi hotspot, you can get onto the Internet. Now,
is that dangerous, though?
Well, dangerous is a... is a relative question. And it's dangerous in the sense that if you go to a Wi-Fi hotspot and you're going to get on the Internet and conduct business like banking or something that contains any of your personal identification information, In that particular case, yes, that would be, I would say, dangerous and challenging, and I wouldn't do it.
So if I wasn't doing that kind of stuff, would somebody still be able to access my sensitive information once I open that access to Wi-Fi? Are they still able to go in there and do whatever they want?
Well, as long as your computer is patched and you don't have a Trojan on there, right? Like someone emailed you a Trojan, and then you're usually pretty secure. But what you're talking about is man in the middle. So say you go to some place that offers free Wi-Fi, and say it happens to be McDonald's or Starbucks. If you had some guy in a parking lot, some notorious person with a trench coat in a white van, and you know, stuff like that, and they also created another hotspot that had the exact same name. Mistakenly, people would connect to it. So anything that you transmitted out of your computer, they could theoretically monitor and capture that information. Now, but they would have no means of getting into your computer unless they had a vulnerability. You know, like, oh, they knew about this hack, and or your computer doesn't have all the Microsoft security updates or all the Apple security updates. So the thing
what happened to Equifax? Then?
Equifax, their servers were attacked by a vulnerability that was
in the operating system.
Protected,
beg your pardon?
Yeah, they knew about this.
Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, so the Equifax, they knew about this vulnerability in March. They patched some servers, didn't patch the servers that serve this website using Apache Strut and the Struts, and they just didn't patch it. And they have now figured out that sometime in May was the first time that somebody had breached that server. And so they've gone back now from May until, I think it was May 7th was the first time, but sometime in May through July 30th, they found a lot of times the same people had gone back and forth onto that server.
Yep.
And so what Ed and Cal were saying was that your computer, as long as you keep it patched, as long as you have antivirus, endpoint protection, but antivirus, and you use a good malware program. We recommend Malwarebytes because of just the free version. Or you can pay for it. It's not very much. But if you do all of that and you're careful, as Cal suggested, when you go to a McDonald's or Panera or any place where there's a hotspot, you can conduct business online. You know, but you got to be really careful.
I'm sorry, I'm taking up all your time, but can you tell me, is Norton a good internet security package?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's better than nothing at all, for sure. And yes, it is a good product. It's been around for a while, and it's been protecting a lot of people. For example, my ISP, which is Comcast, they provide internet to me for free. Because they want to protect me, so they protect their own network.
No, they provide Norton to you for free.
Yes.
Yes. And other internet providers provide McAfee. That's also very good. If you have a modern version of Windows, that it'll either come with Windows Security Essentials or Windows Defender. If it's Windows 10. That's also an excellent antivirus and protection.
I've read that Norton and LifeLock have become one company. Is that correct?
I don't know that for a fact. I'd have to check.
No, I didn't. I haven't heard that. I'm sure they're partnered together in some fashion. That wouldn't surprise me.
I think LifeLock partners with everybody. Yeah.
Well, I think one of them bought the other one, but I don't remember which way it went.
Well, you ask a good question. I mean, I wish I could get free internet service. One of the things I do is I also I've loaded Opera, which is an alternate web browser, on one of my computers at home, and I have for like 6 months. And then there's a setting in there that basically says, always enable VPN or secured connection. So anything that passes through my computer is it goes through a server in England or goes through a server in Canada or in America, or I could say South America. And so all my connections are secured between me and these other servers. So it's a free version of VPN that I use. Now, that offers me an additional layer of protection where I can use, or you could pay for a personal VPN, which is not very expensive. You can do, I think it's like, $4 a month, and you could pay someone and they could provide you VPN for free. But then again, you need internet access in order to establish that connection.
One last thing, Joseph, before I let you go, I'm going to turn the speaker down a little bit. Listen, let me ask you a question. Is it that you can't afford it, or are you just that cheap?
I'm a little cheap. I can afford it, I guess.
That's okay, so what? So what you should do, in my opinion, and I'm cheap too. Don't get me wrong. Check around with all the
paper stuff. I don't have to, you know.
Yeah, check with all the internet providers and find the least expensive one that they have, and buy the lowest rate that they have, and see if that'll work for you. If that works out for you, you'll do just great. Okay.
Alrighty, sir.
I'm going to let you go. You have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, he brings up a good point. I mean, so he's not even the point of wanting to cut the cord, you know, for paying the cable bills. He hasn't got a cord to cut.
Yeah. He wants to do it as cheap as possible over the air with air.
So, you know, remember the point? There was a point when Royal Oak was providing free internet service down Lincoln Street in downtown Royal Oak. And some communities still do that, but it's, you know, but that whole thing. I think they retired that a few years ago.
Yeah, and it wasn't the fastest internet service either. Hey, listen, we're going to get back with more calls. We got Joe from Livonia hanging on. We'll get to you shortly. And you can call in, too, at 1-800-859-0957. We'll be back with more here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. There's still some time to call in if you want to with your calls and your questions. That's at 1-800-859-0957, 1-800-859-0WJR. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about real quick, Ed, is that tomorrow on September 17th at the Birmingham Temple in Southfield, we'll have our monthly Mac group meeting, and everyone's welcome to come out. You don't necessarily have to have a Mac. You could have a Windows machine. And we're going to have Bob Levitas, and he's an author of more than 75 computer-related books. Many of them are the For Dummies type books. So if you want to know stuff about For Dummies for Macintosh, for the iPhone and iPad, you want to come out to our meeting tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And you can find out more information about that at macgroup.org.
And for our previous listener that was trying to figure out why he wanted to pay for internet service, let me just say I've saved so much money watching YouTube videos on how to fix my broken down cars.
Oh my God, tell me about that. They are the most informative and easy and clearly displayed ways to learn how to do things.
Not learn, but it's like, you know, I'll put this, I'll shout out to the ether and Google or YouTube, and I'll say my Sebring will not come out of park, it's stuck. And then I got these guys there. It says, oh, you got a broken spring in your gear shifter, and if you replace it with a cotter pin after drilling a hole through it, you should be good to go. All you have to do is do this. And they showed me. I had that car running in an hour, and I'm so glad.
I mean, how much did it cost you?
It cost me an hour and a half and saved me over $600.
Yeah. And just think, even if you had to pay $20 a month for internet service, it'd still be worth it, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
It's just great. Hey, listen, let's go back to the phones, and let's go to talk to Joe from Livonia. Hey, Joe, how you doing today?
I'm awake.
That's good to hear. What's going on, Joe?
Well, first of all, good evening to you guys. Number two, suggestions. To the previous caller, some of the ISPs will actually allow you a 30-day trial window. Verizon/Infinity doesn't operate ISPs in Livonia like, but it does in other areas around Detroit. So that might be a hindrance for him.
So they give him 30 days of free internet service to try out before they actually have to sign up, huh?
Some.
Yeah, some. So it's like
I'm finding is very limited, but they're there.
So shop around and see if you can find out anything, and if you're lucky, you might be able to find it, correct?
Yep.
What's the other thing do you have for us?
Okay, the other one's with the hack on the Experian thing. I went, first of all, it's clark.com, and it will take you to a various number of articles. One of them includes what the fees are if you want to freeze your account. And Michigan, in some cases, does not provide some of the services that other states do. If you're under 16, there's not a fee involved. But if you are, that's $10 to freeze, and there's $10 for where the heck we're at.
$10 to freeze and $10 to unfreeze it when you need to use it.
Well, it's a permanent removal. It's not Michigan doesn't offer a temporary on block.
Okay. So, once again, Jill's pointed out a very good point, and there's a lot of detail on this Clark website, so you want to read it fully before you do anything. But there's a lot of information how things can vary from state to state. So this is people in Michigan, people in Ohio, Indiana, or any state that we reach within the sound of our voice. You want to check out all the information about it. You can check it at clark.com. You could check it with your state's attorney general. You can check it with the Consumer Protection Bureau and find out all the information regarding how you can handle your credit and protect it in your particular geographical location. Once you get the right information, you'll be able to take care of that situation and protect yourself. Hey, Joe, thanks for calling in and giving
us
that
information. One other item, and that is with the Secretary of State, if you call in Michigan, your wait may be extended.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Joe. You take care, and thanks a lot for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, Cal, I wanted to talk about this. We only have a few minutes left in the show. Do we have another caller?
Yes, we do.
Oh,
let's go jump on them real fast.
I'd rather help with the dog callers.
Okay, yeah. Steve from Lathrop Village, you're on with the Internet Advisor. What's going on?
Hi, I have a 20-year-old LaserJet printer, HP 6P, very nice machine, never overrun. But I think my operating system upgraded and deleted the drivers to use it. I wondered if there was some way I could use the internet to keep it in function.
Well, you should. I mean, I had an HP LaserJet 6P. I loved it, but I had to stop using it because the things that I was printing, and it wasn't much, were basically overwhelming it because the memory was so limited.
Does that 6P have a USB
connection? Yeah, my son told me the same thing. You've had trouble with it before, just get a new one, is what his suggestion was.
Right. Well, the content that basically the content we're printing, either from a website or even a Microsoft Word document, as an example, when you print to it, it looks like it's only a few words on text, but there's so much information in there that's in the background, it's overwhelming the printer. But specifically what you're asking is do they offer drivers? Is it Windows 10 you were upgraded to, or was it a Mac operating system?
No, it's Windows 10, but I can't get it to print anymore. I used to be able to select the machine to print, but now it won't even access the option to print.
Okay, how do you have the printer hooked up? Is it using a USB cable?
I think so, sure.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to suggest that you do. Go to hp.com and put in that printer model, and you can go to their drivers section. The chances are pretty good what's going to happen is that you won't have a driver specific for the 6P, but it'll bring up the HP Universal Print Driver. Download that print driver to your machine and try that. If it does not print, then I have to tell you, unfortunately, that machine has come to the end of the road, and it's time for you to go out and get a different one.
Well, the other thing he
sure.
Could...
My printer is 20 years old. You're right.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that he may try is what you neglected to say, and this is the first thing. You might want to go, since it was updated, you may want to go into your printers and devices, and in Windows 10, it's not the easiest place to find. But if you hit your start button or your Cortana and just type in devices and printers, in the Cortana, it'll bring it up. Delete your existing printer definitions in there. Remove them. Highlight them and select remove device.
For the 6P.
For the 6P. Remove the, and then have it unplugged when you're doing that. Have the USB port or the parallel port.
Yeah, that's the first thing they told me to do.
And then, then plug it back in and see if the Windows 10 will automatically discover that device now that you've removed it all. How many, is that the only device you have defined in there? Just out of curiosity.
I think so. Yeah. I'm not sure what you're saying, but yeah.
It's my only printer.
It's not a...
Well, what you do is you hit your start button or the Cortana with Windows 10 on the bottom of the screen. Type in device and printers, devices and printers, and that'll bring up a utility within Windows 10 that allows you to view your devices and printers. Remove your printer, plug your printer, you know, remove the definition for your printer in Windows 10, and then reboot the computer, plug everything back in, and then hopefully Windows will rediscover that printer device. If not, we might be where Cal's saying and is to purchase another one. But we're at the end of the show. Thank you for that excellent question.
I think that's about it. I mean, Gary, thanks a lot for being with us. Hopefully you'll be back again the next time we're on. And everybody that's out there listening, please stay tuned to WJR for more programming today. But check on our schedules on a regular basis. And when we're not having MSU football here, you'll hear us in this spot. Every Saturday from 5 to 7 p.m. Once again, thanks a lot to Tom Baker, our engineer, doing a great job back there answering the phones. And you have a great day. We'll see you the next time here on the Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.